Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello, and welcome back to the Rugby Pod. We're a day late, and we apologise, Andrew, to absolutely no one.
Absolutely no one!
It's a quiet weekend, unless you love the URC and Rugby Europe, Andrew, which you do. But if you're eating at the top table of rugby, this is the week for it. Andrew, what we got?
Well, it is the penultimate round of the Six Nations, and I can't wait to discuss your tweet, James Hamilton.
Of course, I can't remember what I said. I tweet a lot, but not as much as you. There's rumours of unrest in the England camp, and that's not coming from me. I had no idea, but I did a bit of digging before the rugby pod, and yeah, there's rumours brewing, Andrew.
Is there?
Apparently so. But we'll maybe dig a little bit into how Steve's going to make up his team this weekend against the mighty Irish. But also, there's an interview, Andrew. You caught up with Leicester Tigers head coach Dan McKellar. Without me, how was he?
He was good. We'll hear all about Leicester Tigers and everything that goes on in the coaches' world in a bit. So settle back, enjoy, and make sure you've subscribed on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Lucasfilm and Disney Plus, presenting an all-new Star Wars series, The Acolyte. Stream the 2-episode premiere June 4th and witness an investigation into a shocking crime spree where secrets will emerge and no one is safe from the truth. The Acolyte. 2-episode premiere, streaming June 4th, only on Disney Plus.
So, Jim, how are you, mate? Busy weekend?
Yeah, quiet weekend. Take the quiet when it comes, Andrew, which isn't a lot.
You were doing a dinner, though, weren't you?
Oh, I did, actually. Yeah. Well, I say a dinner. It's different to how you do a dinner. I was in and out. Actually, big shout out to Oban Rugby Club. There's a lot of Oban Rugby people there. It was a lovely establishment in Oban. A bit of Kaylee, a bit of music. But it was more than that. It's the start of Rob Wainwright and the Mental Crew, friend of the show, Stuart Hogg, is doing the cycle as well. So they're bringing the match ball from Oban to Rome in Italy for the Italy-Scotland game. Unbelievable. I mean, to be fair, the weather's been pretty decent, so I don't feel sorry for them. If it was a blizzard...
How many miles is that?
It's over 1,000.
Mate, you don't feel sorry for them. Tell the Gooch that after about 100 miles.
Very true. I don't feel sorry for them today because they're only 2 days in, yeah. So...
Mate, think back to that bike ride you did and I partook in for about 6 minutes for Ed Slater. Go back to how painful it was and then think about those lads going all the way to Italy. Fair play to them.
Very true. Very true. So they're going to get there the night before. So we should give them a big shout out at the start because that's to raise money, raise awareness for My Name's Doddy Foundation. We all know this place that we're all in with this terrible disease, we're still not yet found a cure. Obviously, friend of the show as well, Ed Slater, is going through his battle, Rugborough as well, grafting his way in the way that he's doing that, and Kevin Sinfield and all these people that are involved in trying to find a cure, trying to raise funds. So Rob Wainwright, who's an absolute machine, big shout out, early doors on the pod to him, and Hoggy and all the team and all the back kind of staff and helpers and support team, I suppose. That are doing that. So watch out for them if you're Italy, Scotland, Rob Wainwright. The great Rob Wainwright will be taking the ball on the pitch.
Legend.
So yeah, that was good. That was good, mate. And you?
Yeah, I mean, I was supposed to have a quiet weekend with a lack of mainstream ruggers, shall we call it. Yes, there was URC, but I don't dabble in URC work. But yeah, I had a lunch on Thursday with Alton Rugby Club. So big shout out to all those boys and girls. And then I had a weekend with the family, but it was extended family this weekend because I was up in the mighty Coventry. And I say mighty Coventry, it ain't that mighty when you got to go to what I call the Walsgrave Hospital. I think it's University of Coventry Hospital. My old man has had a fall, broken his hip, broken his leg, had a bang on the nut. And so, yeah, it was a tough weekend, actually, up in Coventry seeing the old boy who's not doing overly well. So big shout out to my old man, Malk. I mean, there's battlers and then there's my old man. Everything he's been through, he amazes me every time. So hopefully he can bounce back. But yeah, somber weekend and hopefully he's on the mend. Well, let's flip it, Jim. Let's talk about something positive. Let's talk about that amazing place that is Las Vegas. Did you watch the NRL build-up to the openers in the season. How good's that? Can we get out there? Can we do some NRL?
They won't want us, Andrew. The NRL hate rugby union. So we might not be aligned with the NRL as much as I'd love to. I text Matty Johns, tried to get him on the podcast as well. And he just texts back. What do you think he texts back?
No.
He just, nothing. No. And I think it's because he's in Las Vegas living it up. But look, I know it's a different sport, but I was watching it, Andrew, and I was a bit sad. As good as it was, being in Las Vegas, I know it's a place that...
What's Las Vegas?
Yeah, you get lost, don't you? Is that yeah, what happened? What do you call it?
Las Vegas.
There you go, Las. I call it get lost in Vegas, even though I've never been.
Have you never been?
Intentional. Intentionally, no.
Oh.
I don't want to go. Andrew, you've seen what happens when I get loose. So
can you imagine a Rugby Pod live show in Vegas?
Yes, I could.
Let's
I could
do
imagine it.
It. Let's do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, Rob shaking his head.
Rob might not come back.
I know. Rob's had a hell of a weekend. He said that he's been feeding the kid tin sausages. Who eats tin sausages? Might eat them in Las Vegas. But yeah, the NRL, it was amazing. I was loving it. And I was a little bit down, I'll be honest, because I was like, have we missed the boat here? I don't feel as if we've missed the boat, but we've definitely missed a trick. And the NRL, you look at everything around that. And this is the conversation, Andrew, we're having in our game. Obviously, Courtney Laws, that blows up the conversation and the interview we had with him on the pod. But you look at the NRL, there's a few things, right? The marketing, how they've done it. But for me, did you watch any of the game, Andrew?
Yeah, bone crunching.
Mate, they're going higher than a high kite. Mate, they are going so high in the tackle. And I don't agree with that or whatever, but the violence and the chaos, and they understand the sell in America, the marketing around that. And I'm not saying by taking other players' heads off and stuff like that, but mate, that is a fucking game. The NRL is a game, and the way that it was done around that, I was watching it and I was a bit down because I was like, have we missed a trick in not getting to America early? We were 7 years out from the World Cup in America. The terminology they were using, and I read an article actually that Matty Johns was doing around, they need to change their terminology and how they promote the NRL because they're calling it rugby. And a lot of people in America see rugby as rugby union because the USA, they've got a national team that play in the World Cups. And the Sevens as well. So they might just call it the NRL. There is that kind of confusion, but as a spectacle to play in the stadium where the Super Bowl was, to be in Las Vegas, you see all the content they did around it, like lads walking into the stadium before the match looking cool as shit, wearing, you know, bloody, what are they called with the red soles?
Louboutins.
You've got a pair of them.
Louboutins. Yeah, I got a few.
Louis Vuitton bags and stuff like that, looking cool as anything.
So I look like, cool when I wear my Louboutins.
Well, your feet are blasting out the sides of them, so... I don't know. I don't know whether that's gout or what, or the elephant man. But yeah, you've got to give a big shout out to the NRL.
Yeah.
That for me, like as down as I was on it, I had the appetite to go, like, let's keep pushing. Yeah. Let's keep growing. Let's keep doing cool things because one day we're going to be there, aren't we? With I said the World Cup's there in 7 years. I know it's not necessarily in Las Vegas, but it's definitely winning the American audience and the markets over there. That game was shown to 100 million people on Fox, terrestrial TV, and all the content around it. It's kind of, Andrew, we're doing it in rugby, right? In rugby union. Like, that's what we're doing. But they've just gone to another level. So big shout out to the NRL. It was class.
Yeah, it's ironic, actually, because, like you said then, in America, there is the World Cup there in 2031. We've just seen the Sevens in LA this weekend, and I might mention that a bit later as well. And we've dipped our toe in the water there as a game, rugby union. We've seen All Blacks playing Ireland, and Ireland had that famous win in Chicago.
That was class. That was wicked.
And obviously the Premiership have played a few games there.
I played.
Did you play? Yeah, Saracens. Was it New York at the Red Bull Stadium, was it?
Yeah, Saris versus London Irish.
Yeah. And there's been a couple of them, I think, hasn't there? So we've dipped our toe in the water, but we've never followed it up. It's like you put the end in, but not gone all the way through and given the full length kind of thing. So the ironic thing about the NRL is Americans wouldn't have a Scooby about rugby league because it's just, unless you're an expat there, it's just not played. Where rugby unions should have been ahead of the eight ball with the fact that Americans know rugby, whether it's sevens, 15s, the World Cup, it's building up. So what we've got to do is follow. There's a lot that goes into these discussions and agreements. Obviously, the NRL have signed, I think it's a five-year deal to have their season open there for the next five seasons. So they've committed to that, to grow that. Come on, Rugby Union. Come on, the Premiership. Come on, the Investec Champions Cup. Come on, the Six Nations. Come on, the World Cup. Autumn International. Whatever it is, bottom line is, we need to go to Vegas, so let's get it on. Let's get it on.
But on that, Andrew, on the American dream and everything around that, so Jason Momoa is putting on an exhibition match, I think it's in July in San Diego, for the All Blacks versus Fiji.
Yeah.
So, like, yes, we want the World Cup, of course, we do in 2031 to go to Las Vegas. Yes, we want, I don't know, like a Six Nations match going over there. But actually, if you do an exhibition match and you do like an All Blacks versus South Africa, or actually I sat on this and thought, well, the All Blacks played against Ireland in Chicago, like we just said, but the Irish expat community in America.
Mahusas.
Bring the Irish in against the All Blacks and do one there. But you just said, let's follow. Mate, let's fucking lead.
Yeah, but we can't lead because they've done it.
Well, we can't. I know.
I get you.
Hindsight's a great thing. Yeah. But that's why I was so down on it, because I was like, why are we not doing this?
Yeah.
But you can see the way they talk about the NRL. You see Russell Crowe doing the intro and stuff to explaining the games. And actually, out of the two games, mate, and we know this, it's a much simpler game to consume.
Yeah.
There's no lineouts. The scrums are in and out. Five tackles, power plays. And they are letting the elephant in the room, which is the high tackles, letting them unfold.
Yeah.
Like they really are. And that for me was not the worrying bit, but I was like, who's letting this go? The Americans and the Australians, clearly.
Different rules.
But it was class.
I think someone like Russell Crowe, obviously he's been heavily involved with the Rabbit House for many years, hasn't he? And he's a global superstar in his own right. It's what the Big Jim Show's doing, to be fair. The Big Jim Show live. You had Gerard Butler on there, which is the same.
He needs to be the voice. Yeah. I think he should. And he did a thing for Scotland Rugby, actually. Like, you're right. Like, people like that who like union, who have a global voice.
This is rugby union.
Something like that. That'll do. I'm sold. You know, whatever. If he says it in that voice, I'm sold. And many people are. But you've got to take risks. I just feel we're not quite there yet. We're talking about it. We're dabbling a little bit. But that was a massive risk for them. And from the outside looking in, I don't know how commercially it played out for them, but it looked like a risk that if it hasn't paid off, it will pay off over the next 5 years as they go into that.
Yeah, 100%.
Should we get back to our planet,
yes,
Andrew?
Yes, let's get back to rugby union. What's happening, Jim? You said there's rumours.
Well, only because they're in the notes. I had no idea. So I did a bit of digging and there was some positivity, people like talking about Steve Borthwick. Have you heard anything or not?
I've heard bits.
There you go. That's why they're in the notes. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Firstly, I will say, and this isn't me being all hype and all love, I don't get it. You've got an England team, right, who are getting better week on week, or are they, if you look at the stats? I know they're not. I know when you look at the stats, but I don't know how you can go all in on someone like Steve Borthwick and then be like, right, mate, it's the Six Nations after the World Cup. Get someone else in. When I did a little bit of digging and looked at some of the articles and some of the stuff on social media, which is basically, if you look at that, then it's all truth, isn't it? But public opinion is saying that. And I don't agree that, you know, Steve Borthwick should go. Like, I think it's ridiculous to even think that that would be the case. But I would say as well, and maybe then you can talk about it, mate, it's a pressure job. It's a high pressure job. Like, there's an expectation being England coach in any sport. So football, but rugby union as well, there's an expectation. And I go back to it, you finished third in the World Cup in France. Mm-hmm. I think it's looking like there are signs of progression. And then you look at the Prem and not being able to pick players outside of the Prem. And like, there's a few issues, I think, like administratively that they need to look at, but that's just my opinion.
What do you see as the progression, James?
They're bringing in Felix Jones.
Yep.
So they're bringing in a World Cup winner. So they're changing up their defence, which, as we know, takes time. Wanting to attack more. So in their mind and the conversations that they're having, so they are appeasing the fans, which I don't think they should do. I've always said that. I don't think they need to play a way in which people talk about saying they need to play a quicker, more attractive style of rugby. I love the way they're playing against South Africa, but they are trying to do that. They've got Jamie George as captain, where a lot of people would have gone down that route and said, we want Jamie George, we want a better or a more charismatic leader. I think they're giving the fans more from a content and access point of view. I think they're picking players that they're allowed to pick from.
They're doing the grip test.
Doing the grip test and the banter test. But I think what you look at what they're doing as well with, mate, they're picking the best players. So if you go through that squad.
Are they Zach Mercer?
You've got, well, he's one. Look at how good the back row is. But players that have been informed, players that we've been talking about on the pod.
Yeah.
Like Feo Boso, the Northampton backs.
Hold on, Feo Boso got 10 minutes when we'd lost.
But they're not going to throw him straight in. But if I was them, I would do. But he's in and around the squad. We were talking about Ethan Roots, how good he has been. He kind of got fast-tracked into the squad as well. Sam Underhill, Ben Earl's playing now. Alex Mitchell's been playing as well. And we've been talking him up. So that's our opinion, right? But there's going to be conversations around, should he go all in on Finn Smith? We both got an idea of what we think around that. Marcus Smith hasn't been fit. Manu Tuilagi's not been fit. Ollie Lawrence came straight back in. So he's picking the best players, bar a couple that we, again, could sit and chat to him about and be like, right, well, we think Zach Mercer should be in because it's different of so-and-so. Can't pick Jack Willis, can't pick Henry Arundel, can't pick these lads that are playing outside the Prem. So from a very neutral point of view, I'm looking at it and being like, I don't get where all the niggle is.
I think the niggle's come, and it's come apparently from inside the camp around what's going on in the camp. So just quoting two very recent retired internationals that have been in the environment under Steve, in the environment under Eddie Jones, Johnny May and Ben Youngs both said that attack is an afterthought. Both said, all we really focus on is defence, set piece, kick chase, kicking game, which are huge components of the game. And I think the frustration is coming from, I don't think they're trying to marry up, we're just going to chuck it around everywhere because that's what the fans want to see, because that doesn't work. But the detail and the time given to that facet of the game in training is where I believe the frustrations come from within the camp. And however it's been leaked, however things have come about, listen, Ben Youngs and Johnny May have said it on different podcasts, and they've been there. You know, they've openly said that Eddie Jones, you know, players didn't know really structurally what was going on in attack because it wasn't really thought about. It was like every focus was on defence and getting a turnover and set piece and pressure game and all that stuff. And, you know, that is an important part of it. What you've said, and I agree, he's picking these players, but he's not marrying up why he's picking them and what they're doing at club level and how they're playing at club level to how England are performing. And, you know, we saw that structurally in attack against Scotland. We looked lost when we had the ball after 15 minutes. Yeah, first 15 minutes were great. We scored the try off the set piece and, you know, there's some half-decent shape. There was some horrific shape in the first 15 minutes. Go back to the first line out when George Forbes passed it back 20 metres to Henry Slade. We're 20 metres away from the game line. And that looks like a team that hasn't worked on attack too much. And yes, you get tries and create pressure from your defence and all this stuff, but you play rugby to get your hands on the ball. Or 99.9% of players want their hands on the ball, want to run around someone, run over someone, run through gaps, put someone into space, use your hands. And I don't think, and what I believe, what I hear and what I listen to, there's anywhere near enough focus on that. Like, you don't go out on the training field and have no balls, do you? We play the game to, we're fucking chasing a rugby ball around the field, whether passing it, creating space, kicking it. But if you're not working on it in training, you're not giving it enough time. And there was the rumour that came out, and whether it's true or not, that one back touched the ball once in a session for England in attack.
And where has that come from? Say rumours. So,
well, it's come from inside the camp somewhere and it's leaked. And however that is, and listen, you know, you've been in environments, I've been in environments where everyone said, oh, it's a great environment to be in, when you know it's fucking not.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that about England. I'm saying that about, you know, there's always underlying tones with, you know, at club level, at, you know, some people love the coach, some people don't like the coach loves some people, the coach doesn't love some players. And there's always underlying currents, isn't there? Because you can't keep 40 players in a club team or 36 players in an England squad happy because you can only pick 15 to start the game and 8 on the bench, right? And it's how long you bite your lip for. It's how long you can hold back your frustration. And whether it's a player that's not being picked or doesn't agree with how they're being played, and we know now that there's way more player power now than there was in our day. Like, we just had to shut up and get on with it, didn't we? Mm. Whether we agreed or not. And that evolved over time. And now players, rightly so, have a big part to play and say in how a team plays and is set up. And going back to the Owen Farrell thing, how confident were a lot of the players to challenge certain things around the team? Well, I can tell you now, a lot of them wouldn't say boo to a goose when Faz was skipper and Eddie Jones was in charge and Steve was in charge and how they set the team up. And rightly or wrongly, they came third. So it worked to that extent. But now, we're trying to evolve, but it's all right talking about it. There's not, apparently, enough work being done in the training pitch, on the training pitch, you know, in the time they have collectively together. And they have more time, England, than Scotland. They have more time than Wales together. And he has used the reason, oh, you know, new team, new, you know, we haven't got a massive amount of training time. And sometimes you don't have masses of training time, but when the frustrations are coming out from the players, and let's not forget, the players are on the field doing the job, and they're the ones that are openly criticised after the Scotland game. So at some point, when the players are getting it, they'll eventually go, well, hang on a minute, you're criticising us for our attack and being disorganised and, you know, not firing a shot after 18 minutes against Scotland. fucking didn't know what we were doing because we don't work on it in training. And then it comes back. So I know Steve will be raging with the supposed leaks that have come out in the camp. Knowing what Steve is and how he is, he will go to the nth degree to find out who has leaked what and maybe jettison that player. And that's the way Eddie Jones did it with Danny Care, if you remember. Took him out of the team for 4 years because he questioned how the team was playing and how, his role and all that stuff. So Eddie Jones just flicked him off. So there was that fear factor of players not questioning authority. And now, you know, ultimately at some point, when you're getting heat from the press, from the fans, from anyone, podcasts, whatever, at some point a player's going to defend himself and go, actually, the fucking truth is we work on defence, kick chase, set piece, and our attack is an add-on at the end or something like that, which is the kind of the feeling that's come out. So, yeah, I know Elliot Daly came out in the week and he said, you know, we know exactly how to attack against Ireland. We were very clear in our attacking plan now and all this stuff. So you can only judge players on what they say in the press and the noises coming out of the camp. And they've been hugely positive under Jamie George. And I completely agree. Brilliant bloke, brilliant character. Is that foil between, you know, Steve and the players? And now there's more empathy with players being more confident to say what they think within the group. And you're picking these players that are playing the way they're playing in the Prem, and then you're asking them to play a different way, or you're not preparing them in the way to play to their strengths. And eventually, you know, someone's either going to say something, you're going to get berated for performances. So it forces the players to actually defend themselves. And that's perhaps where we are. And this weekend's game, I'm not advocating getting rid of Steve necessarily. I don't think Steve is the right man for head coach, I'll be very honest. You look at his credentials and people go, yeah, you won the Prem with Leicester. And, you know, he hasn't had a massive amount of head coach experience. Now, we are supposedly, and I say we, and this, some people might go, you're so arrogant. England is supposed to be the biggest rugby union in the world. And I'm going to say we've probably got one of the least experienced coaching panels as our head coach, assistant coaches. All good blokes and all good coaches in their own right. Steve, people talk about his detail in terms of forwards, lineouts, the detail of that. And Jim, you'll have experience of knowing what that's like. He's phenomenal at that. Is he a head coach? He did the job for a short amount of time at Leicester. He was always going to get the job after Eddie Jones because he's Eddie Jones' protege. My big thing on it is Richard Wigglesworth, mate of mine, inexperienced coach, coaching the attack. That's where we're struggling a bit. Felix Jones has come in and double World Cup winner, amazing. And we're seeing that evolution of our defence. Tom Harrison's a scrum coach, not a massive amount of top class experience. He was at Leicester as a scrum coach for a few years. Kevin Sinfield, great bloke, moving aside, and he is an inexperienced rugby union coach.
And he'd say that. So when you say it like that, and you actually look at the top five, six, seven teams, and I put Wales in that as well, like with Warren Gatland being back, or even when you had Wayne Pivac and having done what he's done at the Scarlets, then was moved into that role, and it was a job too big for him, it seemed. And Gregor, and you know, Gregor went back and forth. He was assistant coach. He was head coach of Glasgow for many years. So I suppose when you look at it like that, you do have a point. And you look at like the All Blacks with Ian Foster, and now Razor's in charge, and he's been waiting for years. He's the head coach of the Barbarians. He's done everything that he's done at the Crusaders, not just for one season where Steve, I suppose, was chopping and changing. And it's the coaches underneath, right? Like that's, you know, we were going to get Jason Ryan on here, who's one of the All Blacks coaches, and his kind of years and years of experience in that role. And actually, when you outline it like that, Andrew, then you have a point. And I suppose if you look as well, you've lost Owen Farrell. You've now got George Ford in there. They probably wanted to play Marcus Smith and give him the keys to the kingdom to attack like a Harlequin style and everything revolve around him. But yeah, I think when you are one of the biggest unions, I'm going to say you're one of them, not the biggest union, you want more. And I suppose this game against Ireland at the weekend, and all the fans that are paying to go and everyone watching it, they're going to want to see England win, but they also want to see an attacking style of play. But also, the only way they beat Ireland is by not playing rugby. You play rugby against Ireland in the form that they're in, you ain't winning that game. So the only way you beat Ireland is kickers the balls and hope for them 50-50s.
I disagree.
You think you can play against Ireland?
Who's beating them? New Zealand.
Yeah.
How did New Zealand beat them?
On the edge.
Right.
And going ballistic.
The last four times we played Ireland, we've gone in with the same game plan. Let's kick, let's play pressure. They'll fucking soak that up, mate. They were, you know, they don't make errors under pressure. Now, yes, we have to have our blitz defence, and our blitz defence is new, and it might test them in a different way than we tested them before, but you've got to get the ball to the edge. You've got to fucking... The All Blacks attacked and played at a pace.
Yeah.
Look at the Irish, they couldn't walk at the end. because of how intense it was. And you're going to have to score 30-odd points to beat Ireland now, because their attack is so good that you're going to have to score tries. So the way to score tries, yes, you might get a couple of turnovers and, you know, an intercept, or, but you can't base your game on that. You can't go, oh, we'll put pressure on and we'll get an intercept. That can be a consequence of good defence, but you have to have an attacking mindset and you have to put them under pressure in the wide channels. You know, we talk about their defence. We spoke about it a couple of weeks ago. Their defence is very good, very well organised. They're very good. One tackle, one bullet, going over the ball, across the field, you know, whoever's competing. And then they've got 13 men, hopefully, for their point of view, on their feet to defend phase after phase after phase. But the way to beat them is through playing at a pace, getting quick ruck speed. And I think England is probably one of the slowest in the Six Nations. You know, you have to get to an edge. You have to have two sides to attack from. Once you've got to the edge, come back and put their defence under pressure. If we just go to a slow kick it, try and maul them, you know, try and physically out-muscle. We ain't physically out-muscling Ireland, are we?
Yeah, but when was the last time England played like that? When was the last time you could go back and say, right, England played two-sided attack, getting out to the edge, quick rook ball?
That's the point. That's what I'm saying about we need an evolution. I would rather us have a crack and lose by 30, putting width on it, yeah, making errors, whatever. Yeah, we talked about Feo Wiboso. Get his fucking hands on the ball as much as possible.
Is he going to be playing? Is he allowed to play?
Yeah, he had an exam last week.
Oh, okay, that's why. Yeah, mate, he's in.
He has to start, right?
He's in.
But look at his impact against Scotland, and people go, oh, yes, he scored the try. Every time he touched the ball, he's having a dig.
Yes.
He's getting over the gain line. He is metres after contact, and they're the key stats, right? Metres after contact. If England don't make any metres after contact against this Ireland defence, we ain't going anywhere, right? So you have to have metres after contact, faster ruck speed, so you're over that gain line. And it's not just about winning a collision. It's about your footwork. It's about the detail of the attack. You know, it's about the layers of attack. It's about the options that a ball carrier has. If he's out there, whoever it is, on his own, and it's like, yeah, he's coming on his own. There's no option outside. There's no option out the back. There's no structure in their attack. So we can go and we'll boom three defenders and smash them. Then you get slow ball. Ireland get turnovers.
You're wanting England to play like Ireland in order to beat them.
Yeah.
Different layers of attack.
Yeah.
Footwork before, taking the ball to the line.
Yeah. Yeah.
You ain't playing like the Irish, mate.
No. But the only team to have beaten Ireland over the last however many years was two teams. France beat them in the Six Nations a couple of years ago. And that, remember that game? The most intense high ball in play time. They just won. High ball in play time. Right? New Zealand, they beat them in the first test down there 2 years ago, whenever it was. And they played at a fast tempo. Sexton came off and Ireland made errors and, you know, New Zealand profited. And then New Zealand beat them in the quarterfinal by playing at a tempo. So if you go into a game with, we're going to play territory, we're going to kick it, we're going to pressurise them, we're not going to, you know, attack them too much, we ain't beating them. And that's what we've done the last four times. Mm. And we've lost by, say, 15 points or whatever it is. And everyone's like, oh, you did all right. We're never going to beat them playing that way. And I'll just say this to you, Jim. Ireland play Scotland in that last game, right, in the Aviva Stadium, possibly for Ireland to go back-to-back Grand Slams, first team to have ever done it in the Six Nations period. How are you wanting Scotland to play against them? Are you wanting Scotland to get it into those wider channels and have a crack and put them under pressure? Or are you wanting Scotland to think, oh, do you know what, let's tighten it up a bit, let's play a kick game, that's the way to beat them? If you're Scotland, what are you saying?
Mate, it's so difficult, isn't it? Because you look at the stats of Ireland and they're number one for everything.
Yeah.
So if I'm Scotland or if I'm England this week and thinking, how do I beat them? You've got to slow the ball down at the breakdown. So
Jacqueline is off the charts, has to be.
Jacqueline's king. But for me, attack doesn't even come into my mind. I'm not even thinking attack, but you are.
What's your name? Steve Borthwick.
But this is what I mean. You've sold it to me now because you're saying we've got to score 30 points, which we know Scotland can do. But if you look at the World Cup, and they just wiped the floor with us with their intensity in which they played. We just couldn't get into the game. It was impossible. But if I'm England, I'm like, well, I've actually got a game plan that I think would trouble Ireland because we've got Sam Underhill at the breakdown. We've got Ben Earl at the breakdown. We've got a good maul. You chat to Bernard Jackman, their one Achilles heel is their scrum. So actually, you do maybe want a dogfight and you want a scrum penalty, kick to the corner, line out drive. Marrow's getting better and better every single week. They're bringing that kind of England crowd behind them at Twickenham. Whereas Scotland, we don't have that game plan. Like, we aren't hugely dominant at scrum time. Yeah, we've got a decent line out. So our game plan is how you want England to play.
Yeah.
You're very jealous, Andrew. You're very jealous.
But I'm just looking back at Ireland's recent results, right? Ireland against Wales, 31 points they scored. Ireland against Italy, 36. Ireland against France, they scored 38. Quarter final, Ireland scored 24. New Zealand scored 28. Group stage of the World Cup, Ireland 36, Scotland 14. The only game that they haven't scored many points was the group stage game against South Africa, 13 points to 8. But that's playing South Africa, which is a whole different beast, right? Tonga, they score 59. Romania, 82. Okay, you keep going, keep going. 29 points against England in August last year. 33 against Italy. 29 against England in the Six Nations last year. They scored 22 away up at Scotland. 34 against Italy. 32 against France in the Six Nations. You keep going back. They're scoring 30-plus points pretty much every game.
Yeah, it's a great point, mate. So it's a really great point.
That's, in my opinion, that's just, you know, we can play a risk-averse game plan like you're talking about and we lose by 15 points, right? And then we go, oh, yeah, no, we had a chance. But did we really? I think we need to, and I said it in a column last week for Rugby Pass, we've got to throw caution to the wind, because what are we learning if we're not? It'll just be same old, same old. And yes, you have to have those components in your game. I'm not saying jouer from under your sticks, but if you've got attacking intent, if you're trying to exhaust players like Tadhg Furlong by moving the ball, players like Andrew Porter, you know, Sheehan's a fucking absolute machine at hooker. Mm. McCarthy's a big boy. We are going to have to move the ball and play at a pace so that at the end of the game, they are walking like they were against New Zealand, trying to empty their tank to win a game. And that's just my opinion, and that's probably why I'm not a coach. I didn't want to become a coach because they work too hard. But
on that, Andrew, it's going to be how they make up the team. So this back line scares me. So if you were to put a team out for England, and if I'm an Irish player, and I'm seeing Alex Mitchell,
yep,
I'm seeing Marcus Smith, I'm seeing Manu Tuilagi, Ollie Lawrence in the centre, I'm seeing Faye Owoboso,
yep,
I'm seeing Freddie Stewart, and I'm seeing like a George Furbank or, you know, a Tommy Freeman on the left wing. Like, I'm thinking, like, that's a proper backline, albeit they haven't played together. So then the question comes around the connections, and this is where I think Scotland are really good, because yeah, you've got Sione Tuipulotu and Hugh Jones. Like, they play at the same club. I know Sione's
not for the next
now.
Two games, James.
You know what I mean? But then Finn Russell, and you've got Cam Redpath, that connection that they had, and we saw how that unlocked England for that kind of one opportunist moment. So if you're saying basically fuck it, let's go out there and do something against Ireland, you need to make up the team then, don't you? Like, accordingly.
Yeah, that back line you spoke about then can play both ways. Can play abrasive, can play out the line, can be physical, but can also get the ball to the wider channels and, you know, put Ringrose under pressure, give him three people down his channel to make decisions. And then you've got to have accuracy to profit. And Ireland are fucking good, though. How good are Ireland? How good? I'm trying to convince myself.
Imagine, though, if you're Marcus Smith, right, you've got the option at the line, you've got the option to kick pass, okay, very simpleton. But you've got Faye Owoboso on your shoulder, who we know makes meters every time he carries the ball. You've got Manu on a short line. You've got Ollie Lawrence on an out-to-in line out there. Do you know what I mean? You think about them options that you've got, as good as the defence is. If you can get that right on the line, you could live with any team.
Look at your detail, Jim. You're an England fan now, are you?
I want England to win, mate. I want it to be the Fan Slam decider in
yes,
Paddy's
James.
Weekend, which will be epic. Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like from the outside looking in, going based on the feel of the game as opposed to watching it back loads, I think England are so stuck in, they don't know what to do with how they want to play. Yeah, it's quite obvious how they should play and build on the layers, but you think differently. And obviously you're thinking differently because you need to score 30 points to beat Ireland, like you've just said. But it's going to be a hell of a game. Like, yeah. I think the England-Ireland game, like, that's the game of the weekend, right? It's always epic. And Ireland, do they get complacent?
No chance.
Tough place to go and play.
No chance.
Huge
history complacent
between the two teams. I don't know where it's come from. I don't. Maybe it's just.
Is this from the tweet?
What tweet?
Your tweet that said the Six Nations results don't go the way that everyone thinks they're going to go this week.
Oh, it could be Italy.
Oh, I thought. Yeah, that's what.
Scotland.
Italy beat Scotland.
Yeah. Burnt history. I don't know. I'm really looking forward to it. That's it.
Yeah.
I think games are hard to predict. That's what I feel like. But I'll just, home advantage, don't know. Just, I could feel something coming from England.
Well, James, you mentioned Scotland. Italy against Scotland on Saturday. Your tweet, Scotland going well, talking about the Fan Slam. Is this a banana skin? We saw Italy much improved against France. Probably should have won, could have won. The ball slipped off the tee and all that stuff. But can you see an upset?
Yeah, I could see an upset.
Ooh.
I'm not saying there will be.
Ooh.
But I think it's going to be a tough game for Scotland.
Amen.
Yeah, I really do. I think Italy, and again, how many times have I said this? They're getting better. They're getting better. But it's there now. Like, I can see the way that Italy play could trouble Scotland.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Because Scotland are playing very well at the minute at the line.
Manicello.
Yeah, Manicello, Ignacio Brex, Monte Ioane. You've got Ange Kupawatsu. They've got a game plan where, and a history, maybe it's me. I'm burnt from years gone by, but Italy run Scotland close at Murrayfield last year.
What about that video that came out last week of Donkey Weir's drop goal to beat Italy, and then there's Big
10 years ago.
Oh, Mr. Kilmore, I'm so happy we beat Italy, man.
Hell of a night.
Yeah, was it?
Me and Sergio on the cigarettes in a shopping mall. Yeah.
That sounds banging.
Hey, you were about to have been there. I was with Castro Giovanni as well, if that's not sold you it.
He'd have been on the cigs.
I know. 10 years ago.
I've never seen you run so quick.
That might be the fastest I've ever run. I think on GPS they picked it up. That was the quickest I've been all game. Yeah, hell of a night. You know, I love Italy as well. You know, and the game at the weekend is more than just Italy playing Scotland. Massimo Cotita, who was our coach, who played for Italy, who passed away during COVID, and the sad story around that. So there's more on this game emotionally for both teams. And a big shout out as well to Marcelo, his brother, who's doing some stuff over the weekend for Massimo. I was going to go. I've got a couple of things at home that I need to deal with. But I was going to go at the weekend actually as a fan and spend some time with Massimo's family in the lead up to that. I just unfortunately can't go. But wicked place to go and play. Rome, the whole gladiatorial feeling around that. And you think about Italy and how well they've played in parts during the Six Nations, mentally, emotionally for them. And I know they've not beaten Scotland in a while, but I just think, like, inside, this will be the one where they're like, actually, like, we can beat Scotland. They've run us close last year at Murrayfield. If you remember that game, I think Blair Kinghorn scored a try at the end of the game.
Yeah.
But if we are going to be taken seriously, and at that event in Oban at the weekend, I was on stage and I said, oh, this is the best team Scotland have ever had. And you remember Johnny Beattie, who I played for Scotland with, his dad, who played for Scotland, the British and Irish Lions, as well, cut me off, like, mid-sentence, was like, what are you talking about? The Scotland 1990 team, and, like, back in the... I said, no. I said, but this is the best Scotland team we've ever had. Like, it's not even fucking...
Were you nearly scrapping on stage with a fellow Scot?
Well, I just let him go. I was like, all right, off you go. Mate, you go and say it. If you're telling me that the teams gone by have been better than this team, then you're not watching the same game. Yeah, all right. Won a Grand Slam when the game was amateur.
Different era, yeah.
All right. It's just a different era. But to a point, I understood what he was saying.
Yeah.
Because we can talk about it all you want. If you go based on the World Cup, we're nowhere near it. Forget whatever group we were in. But now, I think, Andrew, you're starting to see it. The way that we played against England.
Good team.
The way that we played against France, albeit France aren't amazing. That first half against Wales, and we know...
Good team,
actually,
Wales,
we're a good team.
Keep telling yourself that, good team.
So we need to go to Italy.
And lose.
In years gone by, it might have been the case. I think it's going to be tougher
than
we expect, but I expect us to win. I'm like, we should be, again, comfortable to say that we're going to beat Italy and we're going to set up that game at Paddy's weekend, which is going to be epic. And we've never been in that position again. And you can keep, we're finishing third, we're doing better, we beat England again. Like, listen to Finn after the England game. We had him on stage and we're having a crack. He's got a warm can of Tennent's in his hands.
How bad's that?
Going out tonight.
Warm Tennent's, absolutely hanging.
Horrid. We're going out tonight, Finn. And he's like, yeah, but we're thinking about the Italy game. Like, we want to do something.
He ain't thinking about Italy after beating England.
Exactly. Mate, he's out, mate. He's out till 5 a.m. I don't know that. I just imagine he was. But in order to be taken seriously, this Scotland team need to beat Italy and set up that final weekend.
And do it well as well.
There you go. And the pressure's on. And do it well means that, as in playing well, not necessarily winning by 20 points, but playing really well, having a plan A and plan B, like Dan Bigger said, when the going gets tough.
The tough get going.
Because it's going to get tough. Italy are fucking
when the
good.
Going gets tough.
Yeah, just on Italy, big shout as well, Jake Paledry.
Yeah, sad news that.
Retiring.
He did remarkably well to get back, didn't he?
Mate, to get back from that, I was hearing all sorts of stuff, that his leg was basically just barely moving. He was dragging a leg around. So to get back where he got to. But it'll be wicked in Rome, but I do envisage a Scotland win.
Yes.
I'm not going to predict the scores because Austin Healey's going to come and say, well, I'm going to bet you £1,000.
You bottled that though, didn't you?
It could be a fucking blizzard. Man, I ain't the weatherman, am I?
You could be a grand richer, but you bottled it.
I'd rather be £5,000 poorer and Scotland win. Like, I ain't bothered. Like,
fair enough.
Go on, Austin. Let's have a bet on it. Should we do it? He listens to the pod. He said that this is his source of...
Knowledge.
He gets it all from here.
Yeah. It's interesting that obviously... And going back to the England-Ireland game, the way the table is, I'm desperate for England to win at the weekend. If we don't win, I desperately don't want Ireland to get a bonus point, because that means Six Nations is done and dusted in terms of the actual championship. How good would it be to get to that last weekend with the championship on the line? And if you're an Ireland fan listening, you'll be like, fuck the championship, we're at the Grand Slam. But like, it would be amazing for the game, for Scotland. Scotland go to Italy, get five. Ireland don't manage to get a bonus point win over England, and then it's on like Donkey Kong for the last weekend. And Paddy's weekend, Scott's coming over with a sniff. Like, you should be finishing second at worst now in this Six Nations, shouldn't you, really?
Mm. So, yeah, we should. And that's what it comes down to.
Progress.
If we're going to do something. Great progress.
Second is as good as first for you boys, isn't it, Jim? Never won it.
It's not, Andrew.
To take a second.
Mate, we're good now. Don't be horrible just because you've never seen the Calcutta Cup over the last 5 years.
You're way better than us,
mate. Yeah,
we are. Humbly, I have no problem saying that.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Andrew.
Yes, James.
The next game's tough to call. Wales versus France. Yeah. France all over the place. Yeah. I bet they've been on the phone to DuPont saying, don't go out in LA, get yourself home.
Yeah.
We need you.
Yeah.
Just for one game, just to settle the sea. Yeah. Please,
right.
Come home.
It's a mess in France, isn't it? And the mess got bigger after the Italy game. And you said it, there was issues, talked about where there's issues in the England camp, issues in France and the hangover and Gaultier and all that stuff, pointing the finger at Sean, and then, you know, who knows what's going on. I have heard there's a bit of unrest within the coaching setup in France. You know, they did make some changes after the World Cup and how those coaches have settled in and working with the players, and it sees on the field. So Wales will be confident about this one. They've had some issues. The first half against Scotland, they were shocking, then they came back and did well. Could have, should have beaten England, possibly at Twickenham, made a couple of errors. And then round three, they get dominated by Ireland, but again, first half was appalling. The second half was much better, showed some fight. So, yeah, I think this is the game on Sunday where it's so hard to know what's going to happen, because which French, and it's you go back to the old cliche of which French team turns up away from home, they'd kick that can down the road, hadn't they, really, over the last few years. But it's a question mark that's come back on performance, on desire, on skill application. You know, they had some injuries and some issues in the Italy game, Jalibert going off, and Donti's out now as well. So, you know, who they're going to... But they've got so much talent, but they're so disorganised again.
Well, Andrew, with that, who came in and sorted that? you know, where their away form.
Sean Edwards.
So Sean came in and sorted that, that kind of emotional up and down. And that was one of the big reasons he came in,
yeah.
Right? As in done it with Wales, British and Irish Lions, like Northerner, hard, straight talking. And if there is an issue with Sean and Fabian, and that relationship has broken down, well, then you can understand and you can see the massive influence that someone like Sean has had on that French team.
Yeah.
And you think about the, well, we've seen it over the recent years, but the Warren Gatland going up against Sean Edwards. I think France are there for the taking. I really do. I think they are fucking all over the place. To nearly lose to Italy how they did at the weekend, they were miles better than Italy in large parts of that game. Just didn't take their chances, but they've just gone back. Like they've, yeah, and again, we're going over old ground, talking about the World Cup, everything you read and coming out is like a massive loss, not having Anton Dupont. But like this, you've got to deal with it, haven't you? If you're a team like France in the top 14 and the way in which their teams are thriving, the money in the game there, how commercially viable and buoyant it is, the coaching staff that they've got.
They won the sevens, though.
Yeah, they won the sevens in LA.
Because of Dupont?
Because of Dupont, yeah. He's put a massive spotlight on that, to be fair. But what do you reckon, Andrew? Wales, have you seen enough during the tournament to think that they can do something? They've got a game plan that is very easy to follow as a group of players.
I've seen enough from Wales to see really good parts of their game. Their big issue is the first half. Like, first half against Scotland and first half against Ireland, the game's done at half-time. I know they nearly came back against Scotland, but in reality, you're climbing Everest to try and win games. So you can't give. It's all about their start and, you know, the confidence that they get from that. Rafael's been world-class during the Six Nations, as has Wainwright. And the back row is, you know, you look at the French back row, is Aldrete going to be fit? There's Charles Olivon. They've got some behemoths, haven't they? And can Wales cope with that physicality? Because historically, the old Welsh teams have been able to. This Welsh team, that physicality is the question mark. And it leads to some errors from them. By the way, their best fly half, Reece Patchell. What about the offload? Mm. Playing down in Super Rugby. But yes, I can see, because of the disconnect with what we've known about the French team over the last few years to where it's at now and how they look a little bit disorganised and, you know, missing their talisman, making errors. And basically, the French team could always rely on Dupont to create something out of nothing. And that lifts everyone. And then they go on to get another try. And, you know, then it's a machine that was hard to stop. But without Dupont and how disorganised they have been and look, Wales will certainly fancy their chances. I think France will have too much, but Wales is need to cut out the errors, and it's all about the first half for them, because they've put patches of games together. You know, the first half against England, they were winning at half time, and then second half they, you know, made errors and got bullied a bit. And if France go to that bullying game, I don't think Wales have the answer. The set piece is going to be massive for France, because that's where they can, you can eke out penalties from scrum and, you know, kick to the line out drives. They've got too much power, I think, the French, but the Welsh will fancy themselves with the state of the French team in the first three games of the Six Nations. You know, France realistically should be played three, lost three as we speak. And, you know, that was unheard of over the last few years because they've been competing for a Grand Slam with Ireland. So yeah, Wales will back themselves. Can I see them doing it? I think France will have a little bit too much if they can not have the issues that they had with having to move players around and injuries, red card and all that stuff. If they keep their noses clean, I think France win this by 10.
I reckon Wales win.
By?
8.
There you go. Big win that for Wales as well.
Yeah, red card for France.
Oh.
Just emotionally high.
La discipline! High. Oh, oh.
Yeah, c'est pas la discipline, c'est pas bon. Right, Andrew, England, can they do it over Ireland?
We can do it, but I don't think we will. I'm going to go Ireland by 18.
Oh, gosh. I'm going to go England. I'm going England by 4.
Go on, Jim.
Yeah.
That's because you want it, though. Do you want it? Do you mean it? Do you think it?
Well, it's got to come to an end at some point for Ireland, the run in the Six Nations, hasn't it? So I'm going England by 4.
Okay, there you go. There you
stick
go.
Stick to my guns.
Italy, Scotland, Jim?
I'll go for a Scotland win,
yeah.
But it'll be tough. I reckon it'll be 6-7 points maybe. I hope 8, and I hope we get the bonus point. I don't think we get the bonus point out there unless we get a good start. But we've got the capabilities of doing it. So yeah, I'll go Scotland bonus point. Forget it. I'm going to go all in. Scotland by 11.
There we go. Well, if you're going Scotland by 11, I'm going to go Italy by 1. You said it, Jim.
You don't have to do that. We can agree.
You said there's an upset coming. You said the results will not go the way everyone thinks this weekend. So I'm going to go, I don't think it'll happen. I'm just going to, for the crack, Italy by 1.
Oh, gosh, you're a horror.
Well, Jim, we're going to take a break now from the Six Nations because I caught up with Leicester head coach Dan McKellar.
Lovely, very jealous.
Delighted to say I'm now joined by Leicester Tigers head coach slash director of rugby, the Aussie legend, Dan McKellar joins us. How are you, pal?
I'm really good, Andy. Thanks for having me on board, mate. Listen to plenty of episodes of the Rugby Pod, so it's nice to sit here and have a chat, mate.
Oh, no. Sometimes I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing that you listen to it. I'm always kind to Leicester because I'm part of the family, aren't I?
Yeah, no. I certainly appreciate your support and being a Leicester old boy, wouldn't expect anything different, mate.
There you go. It's great to have you on. How are things with you? Let's start first and foremost with, and it seems like an age since you came over from Australia in the summer, and obviously I've seen you up at Welford Road a few times, Matty Olywood's Welford Road, I should say. How have you enjoyed the transition from Australia, you know, obviously being part of the Brumbies, being part of the Wallabies, and then into the Premiership and the Champions Cup and all that stuff, and settling you and your family in Leicester, because that's a massive thing, isn't it, coming over from a bloody nice, warm country to good old England and Leicester?
It's been great, to be honest. It's, you know, I'm not going to lie, it's a big move, and you get all the emotions with a move like this, especially when you got married with two teenage daughters. But from their end, it's been seamless. To be honest, they've fit into school and life, you know, really easily, developed their own friendship groups. They're really happy, which means that my wife, Carla's really happy, and obviously then that means that I'm really happy as well. So I think from my end, you know, when you go to any rugby club on the planet, we're all like-minded. You walk in and all of a sudden you've got 50 mates, and you just crack on with what you're trying to achieve together as a group. And the most important thing for me is making sure that the girls are settled and really enjoying the experience. And so far, so good. You know, you have your days where you miss your family and miss your friends and that sort of thing. That's just human nature, isn't it? But overall, you know, loving being involved in the Premiership and the Champions Cup and, you know, playing at Matty Olywood's Welford Road in front of 25,000 people. I said it before I arrived here. That's why I signed. And obviously with a roster and a group that I think can win things and hasn't been all roses by any means, but we're building.
Good stuff. What I want to talk to you about, and something that our listeners might not know about you, and looking back at your coaching career, you've been very prominent, obviously, in Australia and within Super Rugby, and had a little stint in Japan as well. But you actually started your coaching career and you played over this side of the world as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I was fortunate enough as a 20, 21-year-old, I played up in Aberdeen, actually. Just in the Scottish club competition up there, had a year up there and thought about sticking around and doing the 3-year thing and playing for Scotland. Obviously, McKellar, very, very Scottish.
Yeah.
We originate from near the Isle of Mull there. So, you know, always had the dream of wanting to play professionally back in Australia. So I went home. I didn't achieve that goal initially. And something I've always wanted to be was a coach. Ever since I was a 10-year-old, I always wanted to be a coach. Always had that sort of analytical thinking whenever I watched the game. And an opportunity in Wicklow in Ireland popped up to go over there as a player coach. And I took that as a 25-year-old, which was different, you know, coaching blokes that were 10 years older than you, and a great experience. Love the coaching side of things as well as being able to play and still have some great friendships from both Scotland and Ireland. I think that's the great part about rugby, isn't it? You know, the global game and the friendships that you develop through getting those sort of opportunities. I think we had 15 guys from Wicklow came over for the Leinster game. Recently, I've been up to Edinburgh to catch up with some mates a number of times since. But that's where my coaching career started, was in Wicklow. It was interesting, you know, having to coach guys that 35, probably not in the prime condition of their career.
Yes.
And this Australian bloke turning up, making them do laps and run hills and burpees and all sorts of things, because I had a real desire to want to get the group fit. And off the back of that, we'd have some success, which we did in the end. But, they still curse me even today for how hard I trained them.
Jeez, you'd have hated coaching me then, I reckon.
We probably would have banged heads, I'd imagine. Not as players and as teammates, but no, that's all part of it.
Yeah, it certainly is. How are you finding the difference between Super Rugby coaching over in the Southern Hemisphere, now the Prem? You had huge success, obviously, winning the Super Rugby with the Brumbies. Getting to, was it a couple of finals as well? You beat the Reds, didn't you? Your birth team. How did that go down?
It's interesting because I'm a born and bred Queenslander.
Yeah.
And obviously the Brumbies and the Reds through that period developed a really strong rivalry. I probably wasn't on too many Queensland Reds supporters' Christmas card list at that particular time. But I look, they're two really good teams. that used to go hard at it. You know, we won one and they won one. But it was always weird going back to Suncorp Stadium, and my loyalty and desire to want the Brumbies to win and do well overtook any loyalty that I had towards Queensland from being born there. But it was an interesting period. I think overall, with the difference with the Premiership and with Super Rugby, both quality competitions, but they're different, you know, and they're different for a number of reasons. Obviously, conditions are very different up here, especially from that sort of November period through to February. Hopefully, pitches start to firm up. But here, the emphasis on kick strategy and the detail around not overplaying in your end and playing in the right areas of the field, I think there's a lot more emphasis in and around that side of the game up north here. I knew that before I arrived, and that's aligned with how I think as a coach anyway. And I think it's Super Rugby. They're probably a little less risk averse, I suppose. You'll see teams that'll chance their arm out of their end, potentially overplay too much, which then creates opportunity for the defensive side. Very physical up here. The real focus on set piece and the defensive side of the game allow for that. And there's a huge focus in the south around skill development and that continuity game and you know, being prepared and happy to play high and deep into phase play to challenge and stress the defence.
And then off the back of that, obviously coming over to Leicester, and your sort of Australian DNA, as you say, as a coach, is to play a bit more than over here, but your way you talk about the game and understand the game is probably slightly Northern Hemisphere based, right? Understanding the kicking game and all that stuff. We're seeing teams in the Prem playing a lot more this year. I know Leicester's DNA has been over the last sort of 3 or 4 years under Steve and then Wiggy prior to you was very much risk averse. Let's kick it. Let's drive. Let's have our set piece. And the Leicester DNA, shit, when I played, it was a big forward pack, Goody, kick it and hope for the best. We didn't really play much rugby after that, but it was successful. How have you tried to marry that up with entertainment factor, how the game's developing, but also develop our Leicester's attacking structures? Because there was success the way they played under Steve winning the Prem, but ultimately, it's very similar with England now. We want to see ball in hand, but you've got to have the basics and the fundamentals of the game sorted first, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think the first thing is, you know, you talk about Leicester Tigers DNA or whatever buzzword you want to use, how they play and how they've played for many years. Naturally, there's alignment with my coaching principles and what I value as a coach. You know, the importance of really clear kicking game and kick strategy and the importance of set piece defence as important as anything. So I was naturally very aligned with that, and that's what attracted me to the job in the first place. But on the other hand, you want to evolve and you want to grow, and that's what we're trying to do here at the moment, is evolve our game and make sure that we've got the ability to win games 9-6 and get in the arm wrestle and dominate at set piece and dominate through smart kick strategy, but also have the ability to be able to win 38-28 and score tries. And I think a lot of that, for me these days, defences are so well organised and so strong, and especially in this competition, you know, you've got that heavy press defence or that line speed defence that you face more times than not up here. Obviously, England are starting to introduce that now. So how can you unstructure the defence? How can you break the defence down through creating that unstructured situation? And that's where your kicking game comes into it and what you do off the back of your kicking game, and then having the confidence and the belief to be able to see space and identify space from that, and then back yourself to attack it. And that might be in the front line, it might be in the backfield. So I think that's part of the evolution. We're not ever, you know, going to play like the Harlem Globetrotters or try and play like Fiji. That's never going to work here. But what we need to do is we need to continue to grow and put the players in a position where they feel like they have the confidence and the skill set to be able to go to plan A, plan B, or plan C. So there's a real thirst for it from the group. The players are really hungry to develop that side of their game and are excited by it, but it takes time. And the hardest part of the game to grow and evolve is attack, because there's so many different moving components and parts to it. But we're certainly starting to see some transfer, and hopefully over the next few months, that growth and that evolution continues.
Yeah, 100%. Now, there's obviously been no Premiership League matches. You boys have had Premiership Cup semi-final against Ealing, which you won. Tough old game, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, really tough. Really tough. Like, they're a side that, you know, we actually looked at it as a playing group. I think they had over 1,200 professional caps. I think it was around 60 to 70 international caps. It's probably not your standard championship side. You know, I think Ealing would would compete in the Premiership. And you know, they did well. And we knew going down there on a Sunday afternoon was going to be a challenge, and it certainly was. And that's what you want. You'd rather have that challenge this time of the year than winning that game by 50 points, which we never thought we'd do.
How have you found the truncatedness of this season? Like, you've come in as a head coach, probably the hardest season possible, because there's a World Cup, then there's this long period of no Premiership games, and it's a very different rugby season in England compared to what we normally see. How do you feel about there being no Premiership games? Do you think there should be games throughout the Six Nations, or how do we get the balance of all eyes on the Six Nations, then all eyes back on the Prem? Because a lot of people are kind of struggling a little bit with that now, but this is what we wanted around the Premiership, not having games during the Six Nations period. It's tough for the clubs as well in between, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I quite like it. I think, you know, I remember last year watching during Six Nations, like Leicester played Northampton.
Yeah.
It wasn't long after I signed, and you don't have any of the internationals playing. So whilst it's a great opportunity for other players to step up and play in front of a sold-out Matty Ollywood's Welford Road, you want the best players playing in those big games. So I think what they've done, the decision that they've made to put the competition on hold for the Six Nations period, I think that's a good thing. Do you need two fellow weeks? I'm not sure on that. Can you play three games, have a week off, and then play the last two and compress it that little bit more? You know, that's something to consider. But I think overall, in terms of giving the Premiership a break and being able to have the best players playing in those big games towards the back end of the season is only a good thing for the competition. And again, you know, off the back of a World Cup, and it's different with the Cup being at the start and having so many players away, it was always going to be a little bit trickier to manage. You know, I think we had 12 players away at the World Cup, or players that were either at the World Cup or were injured in the course of the World Cup, and then another four or five unavailable. So that was always going to mean a tricky start, but I knew that was going to be the case when I first signed on. So we were prepared for that, knowing that what was going to be really important was how we got that reintegration of our internationals back into the Tigers system, how quickly we could make that work and get them up to speed and start to make some change and some headway. And we feel that we're starting to do that.
Let's talk about England then. Middle of the Six Nations, played 2-1-2 to start off with. Then we go up to Scotland, and I'm probably sure you were supporting Scotland even though you're employed in England. And it was a tough watch for an England fan, and I'm an England fan now. Where do you see England at the minute? How do you see the development of the team? What would you like to see? We've got some players involved, Freddie Stewart, who got dropped, a number of other guys, Dan Cole, Hazy's involved, you know, Ollie Chesham. There's loads of guys that are involved in this England team from the Leicester setup. How do you see England at the minute, and what do you think they need to do to try and improve effectively?
Look, I think they've had periods within games where they've done some good things, and obviously there's a style and a way that they want to play, and they're probably trying to evolve their game not too differently to what we're trying to do at the Tigers, to be honest, and play to the strength and the skill set of the players that they're selecting. You know, obviously with Felix coming in there, you can see a genuine shift in how they want to defend. There's still a really clear strategy around how they want to kick the ball and what they can do off the back of that. And then I think that their attack is something that they're trying to evolve and grow and use the likes of Freeman and obviously Furbank in the Scotland game and Ollie Lawrence, and use the strengths and skill that they possess naturally. So obviously at the moment it's not the finished product, but I think, as I said, it's the hardest part of the game to change and want to get growth in. So they'd like to have gone up to Scotland and won that game. Scotland are a difficult side to play, especially up at Murrayfield. They put you under pressure in and around the breakdown. They can hurt you off scraps and off turnover ball, and that's exactly what they did. And they've probably got a winger up there at the moment who's one of the best, if not the best, in the world in terms of his finishing ability. There's not too many with his size, with his speed and his power and his ability to sniff out a try like Doohan is. You know, he's in a rare patch of form. So, you know, overall with England, I think they're slowly starting to make headway, but no doubt they'll want to see some more transfer and some more change from the areas that they've worked on from an attacking point of view over the next couple of weeks.
Now, England play Ireland on Saturday, and I'm a bit nervous about how many we could lose by, but there's a little part of me that thinks we can do a job as well. How do you see that with your Irish background as well and your mates from Wicklow? They'll be coming over, won't they?
Yeah, they will be, without a doubt. They'll be 10 pints deep in the clubhouse watching it. But look, I think if you look at Ireland, they're obviously playing a style and a brand of rugby that you've got to admire at the moment. And I think you admire it for the best part of two or three years. a team that's incredibly cohesive. The majority of them play 1 week for Leinster, or all season for Leinster, and then they put on the green jersey and play for Ireland. The coaching group's been together for a long period of time. Now they're very clear on what's required of one another on both sides of the ball. You've got to put them under pressure. You've got to put them under pressure through kicking game and through defensive game, and not allow them to play off front football and off quick ball. It's as simple as that. You've got to disrupt them in and around the breakdown and disrupt them physically. I think England certainly have the ability to really go after them up front from a physical perspective and see how they react to that. And then, you know, take your threes, take your 3, 6, 9 and take your opportunities when you get them in the opposition 22 and apply some scoreboard pressure. And then, you know, sport's a wonderful thing, which is why we're so engrossed or love sport so much, because upsets happen. And if anyone thinks that England are no chance this weekend, well, they're kidding themselves, because I'm sure Andy Farrell and Mike Catt and the coaching staff there would be well aware of the strengths that England will possess.
Now, last thing I'm going to ask you then, obviously you've got a massive few weeks coming up. Premiership Cup final first and foremost, then you've got Gloucester again on a Friday night, but then the build-up to the big one, the last 16 game over in Dublin against Leinster. Talk to us about that last 16 game and how you're going to turn the tide and hopefully go over to the Aviva, I presume it's that, I think, and get the victory, because it's going to be a tough ask. Obviously all the boys are playing for Ireland, you know, hopefully, you know, they're celebrating too hard if they've won the championship and they're not ready to go back to Leinster. But how do you see it going, mate? Because it's a massive game.
Yeah, well, there's no greater challenge, is there? I don't think, certainly in the Champions Cup, than going to Dublin and playing Leinster. Look, I think we take confidence out of portions of that game that we played at Matty Ollie Woods Welford Road a few weeks back. We started well, got out to 10-0, probably didn't have the luck that you need against Leinster. A couple of decisions that didn't go our way. All of a sudden it's 10-all. All of a sudden it's 15-10 at half time. I think it was.
It wasn't a try. I said it on here, mate. It wasn't a try. Double movement.
Yeah. We felt like we were well and truly in that contest. And the challenge with Leinster and La Rochelle or any of the best teams is you've got to go with them for 80 minutes. And I genuinely feel that we can do that. And as I said, sport's a wonderful thing. And what greater challenge is there than going over there and trying to create an upset? Because I don't think anyone besides the 23 players and the 20 support staff or however many it is that travel with us, and obviously our rusted on supporters, most people won't give us a chance. So we'll go over there and we'll throw the kitchen sink at them, and we won't die wondering, that's for sure.
Awesome. Well, Dan, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. I wish you all the best over the next few weeks, Prem Cup final and the big dance when we get to Dublin, and obviously the massive finish of the Premiership season as well. And hopefully we'll have at least one bit of silverware to stick in the Andy Goode Tweet/Champions Club next season.
Yeah, no, brilliant, Andy. No, appreciate it, mate. Thanks very much for your time and enjoyed the chat. Good man.
Top bloke.
Yeah. He is, sorry to miss it, Andrew. Thanks for holding the fort. Yeah. I'll say hello to him next time.
Yeah, he's a good bloke, Dan. Lovely to speak to him and hear from the coach's perspective what they go through.
And that brings us on to the good, the bad, and the ugly, Andrew.
The good.
Let's go. There's loads of good. I know, yeah, but it's good. Yeah, we speak differently. You're posh, I'm not.
In association with
Morningbrawl.com. That's it for men that maul, women that brawl, dark honey, tobacco. You know the script. Join the community. Morningbrawl.com.
There we go. Right, let's start off with the Goode. Montpellier get a mention in the Goode this week. They won the bottom of the table clash at Oyonnax in the top 14 and are now miraculously in touch with the top 6. That league is looking like it's going to have an exciting finish to the season. What else? We're going to go over to the URC. All 4 Irish provinces won in the URC this weekend, which bodes well for their national team as well. So good stuff from them. Georgia get a shout in the Goode. They hammered Romania 43-5 to head to the finals of the Rugby Europe Championship. Richard Cockvilly is going well, eh, Jim?
Under the radar.
Hello, Cockvilly. Cockvilly.
Hello. His kids babysit my kids. There you go.
Good stuff. Over to Super Rugby. And the Waratahs get a massive shout out in the Goode this week. They beat the Crusaders 37-24. It's a big shout out to all our Aussie friends from Sydney. Back into the URC, the Bulls get a mention in the Goode this week. They sold out Loftus Versfeld for their 40-22 victory over the Stormers. So big shout out to the Bulls. Reece Patchell gets a shout out in the Goode this week for his ridiculous offload playing for the Highlanders and sticking with the Highlanders. Hoskins Satutu gets a shout out for his hat-trick. What a name that is. Hoskins Satutu. What a name. You're called Jim Hamilton. I'm called Andy Goode, and he's called Hoskins Satutu. What a name.
Yeah, we got Rob as well.
Very good English names. But anyway, big shout out to Hoskins Satutu for his hat-trick. But the Goode this week goes to one place,
And that is France and their sevens team and Antoine Dupont. Everything he touches turns to gold. There's nothing he can't do, that fella. They won the LA Sevens title, and it was their first win in 19 years on the Sevens circuit. Antoine Dupont, do what he wants and go and win things. So big shout out to Antoine Dupont and the French Sevens team. That's why they win the Goud this week.
Yep, best player.
100%. The bad few bits of bad. We're going to start off with Bongi Mbonambi and how he spoke to referee Amy Barrett-Theron. He was very rude, I thought, and condescending. And he has apologised on social media, but not a good look for Bongi and his captaincy. What else was bad? The dregs, the Dragons, they get a mention in the bad again this week. They took 49 points to Ulster in Belfast, but they went out, Jim, because they kept it under 50, right?
Mm.
The Scats get a mention as well. The Scarlets, they lost 26 points to 10 at Connacht. They're not good. And sticking with bad teams and bad form, the Sharks get a mention in the bad as well. They lost 40 points to 10 at the Lions. So pretty bad stuff from them. What else was bad? No TMO in the Rugby Europe Championship semi-final between Portugal and Spain. Portugal won the game 33 points to 30, but there was a try that should never have been. His foot was on the line in the in-goal area for the try, so that's not good. Lyon get a mention in the bad as well. They lost 40 points to 10 at Bayonne in the top 14. But the bad this week, and I don't think I've ever said this, so it's a new one. The bad this week goes to the Crusaders, Jim.
What happened? No razor.
Over in Super Rugby. They lost to the Waratahs, 37-24. But more importantly, that's now played two, lost two. And it's the first time that they've lost the opening two games of Super Rugby in 10 years. So the Crusaders, Andy Rowe, your mob, you're going to get the bad this week. And then the ugly. Only one bit of ugly to come out of rugby this weekend, and it's over in Super Rugby, and it's to Geordie Barrett, who was playing his 100th game for the Hurricanes this weekend. Shoulder to the head of Jordan Pataia. Clear red card, stonewall red. He got a yellow, it went to the bunker, it was upgraded to a red, but shoulder to the head, upright. Geordie Barrett, not good. That's why you win the ugly this week.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, James.
Yeah, also producer Rob.
Definitely. Well done, Rob. Thanks to everyone else as well for listening. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube as well. And make sure you've subscribed on Spotify.
That a boy on Spotify. Rugby Pod.
Spotted Pod, 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 Pod.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.